Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We've just had day four of the WTA Finals. We've got Catherine. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, David.
We've got Matt Roberts. Hello, Matt.
Hello, David.
Where have you been for the last 2 days?
Not bunking off. I had prior arrangements that were booked more than 2 weeks in advance when we decided to go daily at the WTA Finals.
We decided, yeah. Anyway, we're in three separate places. No pub action for us today, very sadly. No beer, just cups of tea. We've got Matt in his house. We've got Catherine, who's just come back from the gym. We've got me, who's sitting in what looks like the Ramada Inn out of the office. And it's not very glamorous. But we've just been watching a whole morning of tennis with the WTA Finals cracking on. There's been more drama, more excitement, more disappointment, more sadness, more brilliant tennis. And that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it, Catherine?
Great. More sadness. Everyone is looking forward to the next 28 minutes of podcast already.
Well, there's good bits too. Let's start with the good bits. Elena Svitolina was superb once again, and she won through against Simona Halep in one of the more intriguing rivalries. You summed it up, I thought, quite well, Matt, that it, on paper, it shouldn't necessarily be that good a rivalry because they play so similarly. They even came out wearing exactly the same clothes today, which immediately got everybody's back up.
Shouldn't be allowed. Shouldn't be allowed that.
No, I agree with you. They should have home and away colours, shouldn't they? So that you've got an option for a colour clash. Come on, Nike, sort yourselves out. Matt, what makes their rivalry interesting? How did Svitolina win?
I think part of the interest comes from the fact that they've had some quite important matches in the past. I mainly think back to that Roland Garros match where Svitolina led, was it a set and a double break, and Halep managed to come back and win. And I just think ever since then, it's been kind of an important rivalry for both of them. Matchup-wise, yeah, they do kind of clash, but it works. I think they're both good to watch because they move so well, they cover the court so well, and that is kind of takes your breath away. And I thought today was really interesting because Halep, when she played Andreescu, was being outplayed by someone who had a very different style and was just better than her. And I almost felt like Halep was able to accept that more than when she plays Svitolina. Because Svitolina has a very similar style, and it's almost like, well, Halep's like, how come my best tennis is not being able to beat Svitolina? That is almost more damaging mentally, I think, for Halep in this rivalry with Svitolina. And I think Svitolina is in her head a little bit. And they were just having these amazing rallies covering the whole court, and Svitolina just seemed to be a little bit more on it, a little bit more dialed in. She's had probably more matches in the last few months than Halep has, and I just think she's turned into a bit of a WTA Finals expert. She's won 8 matches in a row now in this competition, and the conditions seem to just really suit her.
Well, that's one thing, isn't it, for sure? The conditions, the slowness of the courts suit her down to the ground, but then on paper they kind of should suit Halep as well. Catherine. And I mean, I always felt Svitolina was going to win from the start of the match. I don't know how you felt, the way it was progressing.
Well, Halep, just going back to the court surface, Halep's had not quite kind of a whinge on everyone's behalf, hasn't she? She's not sort of complaining about it in terms of it doesn't suit me. She's saying it's just not great generally for the tournament that our last event of the year, when we're all on our last legs, is being played on a surface that is draining everything that we've got and more from our bodies. She just doesn't think that's fair, almost, or in the best interests of the tournament. So she's had a kind of, it's not quite a whinge, is it?
But it makes quite a strong and important point. Do you feel it's too slow? Because I do.
Yeah, I do. I could. I want to see risk taking rewarded a little bit more than it currently is. I mean, we'll come on to Pliskova and Andreescu in a minute. Just, I thought it was a really on Svitolina. She's developing an aura at that event, isn't she? Suddenly, she's really walking with a bit of a strut, and you know, this is, to quote Alex Zverev, this is my friggin' house. You know, I know it's a different house to the house she was in last year, and it'll probably be a different house next year because they're building a whole new stadium, but there's an aura around Alina Svitolina at this event, and I don't necessarily think of her as an aura-full player. Necessarily, she doesn't, you know, she's not imposing, she's not physically imposing, she's, you know, head down, grind it out, get down to business kind of player. But yeah, I'm so impressed with her.
Matt?
And she hadn't had a top five win all season, and yet she's turned up at this event, and now she's got two back to back. Something does happen to her at this event, and it could be the surface, but I think it's more than that. I think she feels comfortable in her surroundings at this event. And going back to the surface, I think I don't actually mind slow courts, but I think the key is variety. And we've seen a trend where the courts are getting slower and slower, and I think that's a bad trend. You know, when you see someone like Kvitova kind of unable to hit winners indoors, it's really quite jarring. And I do take Halep's point that if you're going to have a court at the end of the season when everyone's knackered and on their last legs, you'd think it would make a bit of sense to make it a bit faster, and that might bring out some better tennis. Not that the tennis has been bad, but I think it could have been better with a slightly faster court.
She did look a bit sulky today, Halep. It was a little bit Halep of old, and I, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. You know, as Matt detailed, the dynamics of that rivalry are really, really interesting, and I do think Svitolina's in her head a bit. But just looking at the final game, Svitolina looked really nervous trying to serve it out. She was 15-40 down, and I thought, game on here. This is where Halep springs into life, and she hit a couple of the most ridiculous, just not on in a million years shot. She hit a backhand down the line that barely made, I'm not sure it even made the tram lines. It was just such a ludicrous shot. Her brain obviously just switched off completely, and she kind of threw that game away. And I thought, that is not the Halep that triumphed mind over matter to beat Andreescu a couple of days ago.
And she did that in the final game of the first set as well. I think Anne Kyotovong mentioned it with you in commentary, David, that she just kind of bailed out a little bit of the last game of the first set, which really wasn't the Halep that we saw 2 days ago against Andreescu. She was absolutely fighting tooth and nail for everything, trying to get into that match.
The on-court coaching visits in the first set from Andrew Bettles and Darren Cahill, I find them so interesting generally anyway. I felt really mixed feelings watching those particular visits, because you'd got Svitolina racing into a 3-love lead and then Halep getting back into it 4-3-2. And then you suddenly got Andrew Bettles coming on, and he's dealing with an Alina Svitolina who suddenly, within the space of just two games, is doubting herself, or or there are recriminations about her own game. And we saw the same thing with Halep as well when Darren Cahill came on. And I'm not sure whether that's just human nature that you do that. Perhaps it is. But I kind of don't like to see it. I don't like to see the coach coming on and talking and having to hear their complaints about themselves. As much as I love to eavesdrop on the doubts and the inner workings of the mind, I also think this doesn't sound great for the players or the sport in a way that they sound so fragile, and yet they're not fragile. I mean, I think it's just an internal monologue, isn't it, really, of what's going on in the brain. And yet, I feel so conflicted about it, because on one level, it's good to talk, and that's good for mental health and for a good message in that regard. But then, because it only happens on the women's tour, you've got this visual of two blokes coming out and sorting out two women. Mentally and hearing them out, and I just feel really, I don't know how to feel about that. What do you think, Catherine?
Well, we've talked about it before, haven't we? I don't feel comfortable with it either. I'm broadly, very very broadly, probably about 55-45 in favour of on-court coaching, but I don't like its application in the game. At the moment, I don't like the visual that it creates. I don't like the lazy, sexist arguments and subconscious feelings that it facilitates, because I think it does lead to lazy assumptions about the mental frailty of women. And just, I mean, even if you're not consciously thinking, oh, here comes a man to give a sulky, negative, mentally frail woman the pep talk she needs to pull herself together, just seeing that constantly, the reinforcement of that image, it goes in and it perpetuates stereotypes and subconscious biases that are pre-existing,
creates it in their own mind as well, because you see Halep starting to look as though I need this. And yet you're thinking, well, hold on, you've won two Grand Slam titles without any intervention at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, there's a lot of issues that go into it. The fact that it's just in the women's game and not in the men's. The fact that it's at tour level and not at Grand Slam level. The fact that there are no female coaches, or very, very few female coaches still. I'd say that's almost the most significant of all the factors. But yeah, it's an unideal situation at the moment.
Largely, I would say if I had to fall onto one side of the debate, I would fall onto the side that's against on-court coaching for all the reasons that you've just outlined. But actually this week, I've found on-court coaching in its current guise to be a more interesting viewer experience than I've found it in a while. And I don't know whether that's just because Darren Cahill is back and the way he delivers his message and the advice that he has to give is so often so interesting. I'm not sure. I think it probably is largely down to that. But I also thought it was quite interesting to see a coach like Andrew Bettles, a young coach, almost go up against Darren Cahill, this sort of experienced coach today out on court. And that was quite an interesting dynamic that played out.
Also clever the way Andrew Bettles at the end, when I think Svitolina she was on serve, wasn't she? She was a set and 4-3 up, I think. And then he came on and he was really quick and robust and straight to the point. And he just said, look, fire up now. He knew that this was the time to break. And she immediately broke. And I think that was in her anyway. But it was clever, actually. Clever on-court coaching, I thought.
It's strange how Daniel Dobre has turned into this sort of inadvertent third wheel on the side. He's kind of, you know, he's overseen Halep win Wimbledon, and Darren Cahill's come back in the fold, and now he just sits there in the stands. I kind of, my inner softie's feeling a bit sorry for him, but equally, I'm very much wanting to see Darren Cahill.
Yeah, so we're all conflicted. We all want to see these amazing on-court coaching conversations so we can eavesdrop, and yet we also think that they are unideal. I liked the banana shot from Svitolina, forehand slice, out of nowhere.
She said, she was asked about it afterwards, because it was such a breathtaking and unorthodox and completely out of nowhere shot. And she said she used to play a lot of that kind of tennis when she was a teenager, and she had it coached out of her. She didn't mention the coach, but she said, I think she said she had one particular coach who hated it when she hit shots like that. And so she's moved away from it, but
she said he told me to hit proper shots.
Yeah,
which that looked a pretty proper shot to me. Yeah. Certainly, it was a winner.
I don't know. Maybe it's the Gael Monfils influence. Maybe it's a little bit of Andreescu influencing the women's game, bringing things back into fashion, moonballing, sliced forehands.
Well, it'd be a terrible shame if it had been coached out of her, wouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
I think it was almost just completely subconscious from Svitolina today. She just sort of, it was almost quite kind of lazily played, and yet it was just absolute genius because it completely caught Halep off guard. But my favourite part of it...
She'd had enough of that rally.
Yeah. But I mean, my favourite part was your commentary, David. You just burst out laughing. Like, I think all of us, it was just perfect.
I didn't know what else to do. I mean, I couldn't describe it. I couldn't, you know, it was abnormal to see it, but it was just, it was hilarious. Because, I mean, they'd had about 20 stroke rally side to side with every conventional stroke in the book. None of them had worked. So she chucked in that.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I'd have probably gone for that about the third shot of the rally.
If she hadn't been successful, we'd be saying what a hideous, ridiculous bailout shot that was, wouldn't we?
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Brain Remember cramp. We'd have been crying brain cramp.
Monfils was hitting shots like that in that US Open semi-final against Djokovic that time.
He wasn't, though, because it was hit with such power.
Well, okay, all right, yeah.
He was hitting like a junk version of that in that. God, that was a weird match. Anyway, there's not really
It was a weird match. Oh, one final point on the court. We haven't talked about the colour scheme of that court yet, and I know it's irrelevant, right? But I love it.
It's definitely not irrelevant when you're watching on the telly. I don't think so at all. I think it, consciously or subconsciously, has actually quite a big impact on your viewing experience. I think the colours and the visuals of Labour Cup are a really big part of what makes it so successful broadcast-wise. And I wonder if they've drawn a bit of inspiration from that here, because it's got the same sort of feel about it, that slightly electric look about it, the way it jumps out of the screen. Yeah, I think it's great. Really works.
Yeah, it's sort of a light purple jumping out of a grey surround, isn't it?
Yeah, the only thing I'd say is that that pink Nike kit that Andreescu's wearing and Kvitova's wearing looks like camouflage on that court. That is unfortunate.
One or two people have said that to us on Twitter that they think that it's not a good look for the WTA to have what they've described as a pink court.
Oh.
I don't think it's a pink court.
Why? Agree, what's wrong with pink? That's just diminishing and devaluing things that are associated with being feminine.
Okay.
So pink's crap because it's considered a typically feminine colour. What? It looks great.
Catherine has spoken, folks. It's not pink anyway. It's light purple, isn't it, Matt? It's light purple.
Yep. Right, I mean, purple, pink, I think it's great. You can see the ball, it pops off the screen, and as Catherine said, I don't know, you just see so much blue in tennis. It's quite nice to be watching something and it's different, and yet you can still see the ball really easily.
And Paris Indoors has got green as a court, which is quite an interesting colour. And that actually works, I think, too. I mean, I think that's a good visual, personally. Catherine, go on.
I was just going to regale the listeners with a story of our nerdy debate about when the colour of the Paris Masters court changed colour.
Took place in the pub,
yeah,
over beer.
That is the vibeless conversation that group of lads was trying to get away from.
I'm getting nerdy tennis debate FOMO.
Well,
It was it was between 2016 and 17, Matt.
Okay. Matt, if you'd like to come over and watch Boston Legal box set, I'm about to break a new one open. So anyway.
Well, you're not, because that hotel room definitely doesn't have a DVD player in it, David, because it's 2019.
But my computer does. Right, Bianca Andreescu lost. In fact, she had to retire after the first set had completed against... who did she play today? She was up against Karolina Pliskova. And two love up, Andreescu playing absolutely beautifully. No sign of the back injury. And then she moved out to her right, stuttered to a stop, and had clearly injured something in her left knee. She had it taped up, one of those absolutely enormous tape jobs that stops you basically being able to bend your leg. there is an issue there, isn't there? I mean, you might be able to physically move about, but she couldn't move about properly. I feel very sorry for her. She's clearly hurt herself, and she's gone for an MRI now. We don't know whether she'll be able to play the final group match. Whatever happens, she can't get through to the semifinals now. What did you make of the whole situation? Because she had an on-court coaching session in which she did virtually all of the talking with Sylvain Bruneau, and had a couple of cracking lines in the direction of her opponent as to why she was carrying on. Matt, what was it she said?
Well, yeah, so Bruneau came on with what looked like reading material for Andreescu to...
Which is against the rules, isn't it? You're not allowed to bring...
he was forced to take it away with him afterwards.
Yeah, he was planning to leave it with Andreescu to sort of ponder over, but he had to take it away. Andreescu said that she'd hurt her knee stretching for a shot. She heard a crack rather worryingly. The trainer had confirmed that it was her meniscus. And she said pretty tearfully that, "I don't want to stop." And Bruneau said, "I don't think you should push it." And then Andreescu repeated, "I don't want to stop." And then gave this incredibly sort of, what was at once both really incredible, sharp, tactical insight and also a little bit of shade towards Pliskova, saying, "Well, if this was Halep, I would stop, but Pliskova misses." Almost as though, I maybe don't even have to move to win this match. I just need to kind of work my way through it, get the ball in, and Pliskova might gift it to me, which was an incredible comment to make. And as you pointed out, Catherine, it was just, we were seeing Andreescu, the vulnerable teenager, we were seeing the expert analyst, and we were also seeing the competitive animal. And I must say that was the part that did slightly concern me, because as much as her competitive drive is what makes her stand out, it's what separates her, I think it's been key in her ascension. She's not interested in making kind of baby steps. She's sort of impatient for success, isn't she? But playing on a meniscus injury, I think, is a no-no, really. I just don't think it's particularly sensible long-term. And I don't know, only she knows how bad it is, but how does she know in that moment? I just think it's not a risk worth taking. And I hope she doesn't come out on, when will it be, Friday and play, because, I mean, she's out of this tournament now anyway. She'd be playing for points and money. I just hope she gives herself 2 months off now and rests and comes back in January, because we've seen she doesn't really need to play that matches to have good form. She missed virtually all of the summer and came back and won Toronto. I think she'll be fine if she can just get her body fit, because I'm becoming increasingly concerned about how injury prone she is.
Yeah, I mean, in Catherine's not a medical professional corner, which is becoming a increasingly regular segment on the podcast.
Catchy.
If I were the trainer running on there, my rule of thumb for life would be, if you hear a crack anywhere at any time, pack it in.
The moment the word meniscus was used, I did think, and crack, yeah, I did think, probably best not to carry on. Karolina Pliskova said afterwards, I don't know how bad it is. I was just ready that she was going to call the physio because so far I think she's been calling physio in every match. It was not really a surprise for me. I didn't know it was really that bad. Of course, I feel sorry for her. Which, again, is a little bit of, what was it you called it, Matt? Shade.
Shade,
and Urban Dictionary tells me
shade
means...
There's a lot of very gentle shade being thrown, isn't there?
To say a rude comment towards another person with little or no one else catching the insult except who it was directed towards. So she threw some shade. To talk trash about a friend or acquaintance. To publicly denounce or disrespect.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. It's just that level below smack talk, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, well done. I haven't looked up smack talk. you carry on talking and I'll get onto that. Do you think, I mean, look, obviously the woman has hurt her knee and it's a big worry. Do you think she overdoes the trainer calling generally? I mean, today not being a fair example of that, but do you think, well, do you roll your eyes?
She's very
injury prone. When certain players call trainers a lot, some call trainers more than others, do you roll eyes at them and is she one of them?
I don't personally, but I don't know whether I'm being rational about that because I think she's so great. I've never rolled my eyes at a Bianca Andreescu trainer call, but that doesn't mean that it's not valid to roll one's eyes if that is a reaction that people are having. Matt?
If that's the worst thing about Bianca Andreescu, then that's fine, as far as I'm concerned. It doesn't really bother me. I can see why it might irritate her opponent, but in a way that's just another positive of her doing it, because then it adds this kind of extra level of spice. If she was using them really sort of tactically and because she wasn't injured, then that I'd have a bit more of a problem. But I honestly don't think that is the case. I do think she is injury prone, and that's more my concern.
Yeah, I mean, she missed three, 4 months in the middle of the season. She's, you know, it's just, and she's 19. You know, why wouldn't you be as careful as you can possibly be? I mean,
yeah.
You could say that sort of minor cut she had on her leg a couple of days ago, but the umpire told her to call the trainer for that. So I can't really think of a time when I've thought this is tactical here. There's nothing going on with her physically. I can't think of a time when I've thought that. That doesn't mean that she's not slightly less reticent to call the trainer than others would be with the same niggle or injury, but you know, it's I can see why it rankles, but as a neutral viewer just wanting to watch great tennis, it doesn't rankle me. I can see why it rankles the opponent. I mean,
smack talk the art of telling another person off, belittling them while in the heat of competition. More of that, please.
I mean, which is kind of what Andreescu did about Pliskova today, just not to her face.
Yes.
She did it to Sylvain Bruno. And I wonder if I were Pliskova, I'm sure she's heard about those comments. I would use that as fuel. This is what people think about me, not just Andreescu, because I'm sure lots in the same situation, pretty much everyone would think that about her. I would think, Blumenek, I'm going to prove all these people wrong. They think I'm weak.
Hmm. Very interesting. Right, okay, so that's the WTA finals today. It means that we go into tomorrow with Ash Barty playing against Belinda Bencic. Is that right?
No. Petra Kvitova.
Kvitova, that's it. I'll get there in a minute. Catherine, don't look like that. That's correct. Yeah, first day. Don't forget, Bencic won the first set, and it was Barty who came back to win in three. That's what happened there. And so our scenarios here are
complicated.
Svitolina's already qualified. I can tell you that much. She's won the group, so now it's Pliskova and Halep to play for the second semi-final spot on Friday.
That's nice and simple. Great.
Yeah, that group is simple.
The other one isn't, because the other one, all four players can still qualify. Barty wins the group with a win over Kvitova. And then there are all manner of other scenarios if the others win. I think the other most interesting one is Kiki Bertens. If she wins, she will advance as well. And that's just, we've just never had that before. We've never had an alternate winning through to the semi-finals before. I looked that up at the WTA finals earlier today, and it's definitely the case. So a very interesting element to look forward to. So final group matches over the next couple of days.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Now, Roger Federer has today withdrawn from the ATP Cup, which he was due to play for Switzerland in January. There was not going to be a Stan Wawrinka involved because he's playing Doha. But Federer today has announced that for personal reasons, he's not going to play, for sort of family reasons, that he was quite open in the way he said it, that he just feels that he needs a couple of extra weeks with the family in order to be ready and to also extend the longevity of his career. The quotes put out by Craig Tiley on behalf of the Tennis Australia, obviously this is a huge deal to them, hosting this event in Sydney and in other cities like Perth and Brisbane, I think, are the other cities. It's a huge blow to the ATP Cup, and he was very understanding in his quotes, saying obviously it's disappointing, but, you know, he's been around for a heck of a long time. He's done so much for the sport, etc. And we obviously want him around for as long as possible. And it's always going to be a strain on the family. And he's done incredibly well to manage that, etc., etc. So, I mean, we don't know what the family reasons are, if there's any more to them than him literally just wanting to spend some more time at home. Stu Fraser of the Times did put out a tweet listing all of the exhibitions that Roger Federer is signed up to play over the course of October, November, and then right at the end of December in China, and then another one in the first week of February. I mean, there are a lot of them. So you wonder whether one of those maybe has to go as well if there's an issue at home. I mean, hope there isn't. Hope there's nothing beyond just wanting to spend time with the family. If he does just want to spend time with the family, then I suppose Tennis Australia might be watching quite closely to see whether he actually ends up playing all those exhibitions or not.
Well, I think it's worth pointing out that Tennis Australia are Roger Federer's business partners in the Laver Cup, aren't they? So yeah, it is not surprising that they are not expressing any kind of displeasure at his decision. without knowing the reasons, it's difficult to criticise. But the bare facts are that the only team competition that Roger Federer will have played is the Laver Cup. He won't have played the Davis Cup, and he won't have played the ATP Cup. And it's a shame. That's not the way I'd choose it to be. All other things being equal.
I'm personally, ultimately, I tend to look at him and Serena Williams just slightly differently, and Venus Williams, in as much as they've been around for 20 years, they do so much for the game simply by playing it. I kind of feel like I don't care what they do. They can do whatever they like, as far as I'm concerned, generally, as long as they keep playing for as long as they can, because the more they play, the better. And at any time, they could turn around and say, do you know what? I've had enough of this now. I don't want to play anymore. And I think everybody would sort of, A, be very sad, but B, understanding, because what else have they got to give? What else have they got to prove? What else could we possibly ask of them? It's in an ideal world, they would play for another 50 years and be able to play everything. But, you know, they can't. So, any further thoughts, Matt, at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say exactly without knowing the family reasons. I reckon it's probably just because he does want to spend a bit more time, and then you're therefore looking at his exhibition schedule, particularly the one in China. I think he's playing just after Christmas, which he wouldn't have had in his schedule last year when he did play Hopman Cup, and that's actually an even earlier start than the ATP Cup. So it does suggest that his exhibition schedule is the reason for this. And yeah, he's entitled to play those exhibitions, and that's fine. I feel a bit sorry for Henry Laaksonen, the Swiss player, because now not only is Federer out, Switzerland are out. Like, the whole country's gone from the competition, which I thought was quite extreme. So yeah, and I've discovered this extra layer of qualification that's in the ATP Cup, which I must say I didn't know existed. But yeah, this the second entry deadline, which has always been a thing. It hasn't just come in for this, but it has made me look at the rules a bit more closely at that competition, which I must say had slightly passed me by up until now.
Of all the names that I expected to hear in this podcast, Henry Laaksonen is not one of them. But there we are. Okay, and somebody else who has had a bit of a bad time today is Jack Sock, who lost his match. He was forced to withdraw, hurt his back in Charlottesville in the match that he was playing in a challenger there. And that loss means that he loses his ranking altogether, which is a really sobering thought, isn't it? I mean, I know he's had a bad time. I'm kind of trying to work out what's happened to his protected ranking. I mean, how come he hasn't had one of those? But, you know, he's had a tough...
I don't think... I mean, he's not had a hip replacement, has he?
No, but I mean, you know, people have all sorts, don't they, if they declare themselves injured and then...
But he's been playing... Yeah. He's got the same ranking as us now.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking. He was 9 wins, 22 losses in 2018, and 0 wins, 8 losses in 2019. Like,
oh, crikey.
It was difficult to get much worse than 2018, and yet he's somehow managed it. I mean, he has had that thumb injury, didn't he, at the start of the year, but I don't think he was ever out for long enough to be able to kind of warrant a protected ranking.
Same number of wins as David Law.
Correct. Matt's having a better year than Jackson. Unquestionably. In fact, I think you might be ranked above him now. Anyway, poor old Jack. Hopefully he gets better soon. I mean, he's, you know, see, it's one of those where you look at his social media activity and it's a bit of, I can't say I particularly enjoy it. And yet, he looks like a pretty... I feel a bit sorry for him in a way as well, because I think he might be quite miserable in parts of his life too. You know, he's got no ranking. He's not playing any tennis. I don't know. Maybe he's not having a very nice time of life. But anyway, we don't know the facts. Maybe he's going to have a Dan Evans-type comeback, who got back from, what was it, 900 in the world or something like that. And in fact, he was unranked, wasn't he, after his suspension. So we'll wait and see. Anything else? Anything happened in Paris today of note?
Well, I flicked it on and Fanini's racket was in two pieces on the court.
Right.
He had
so
split it.
Nothing out of the ordinary.
So nothing new there. But he's out of the race to London, as is Goffin, beaten by Dimitrov.
In weird head-to-head news, that extends Dimitrov's head-to-head over Goffin to 7-1.
Yeah, something like that. Wow.
Which is weird. Weird. Weird, weird,
I wonder
weird.
How many 7-1s Grigor's got over the top 100.
Yeah.
Or 50 anyway.
I thought you were going to say 20 then. You said 100.
I just sort of came out. I don't know. Denis Shapovalov plays against Alexander Zverev tomorrow. Apparently he's never beaten him. He's never won a set. So we'll Ooh. See if that happens. Denis has got a new haircut. Every haircut he has seems to make him look younger. Maybe I should try the same. But anyway, okay, folks, trying to look younger when you're watching DVDs from the 80s, not going to happen.
Pushing a rock uphill there, David.
Okay, well, we'll be back tomorrow with another tennis podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com with our mascot, Rio, with a Y. Tell all your friends about the tennis podcast, if you can. And scroll down, sign up to our newsletter, scroll down on your phone on the show notes and you can sign up to the newsletter. And we'll be back again tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.